Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Alan Abadesa-Green, Douglas Bowles, and Bill Klaus about the Sync Book Volume 2. And we have a lot of things, of course, to pick up on here and continuing. This is a broad discussion. And, of course, both Bill and Doug and I think guest host as well, Alan, joining on the other radio shows where much of this is being unraveled as well. But I guess I'd like to begin with you, Douglas, because I was kind of alluding to it earlier, but we didn't really pick up on it. 42. Why 42? Tell us about that.
That's the big question, really. So, just the most selfish personal reason, my birthday is April 2nd. I've always been the 42. So it's so hilarious that I would make all these acquaintances on the internet. You know, so that's what's so amazing to me is, so many of us saw the world the same way. We processed information the same way, and about the same time, 2005, 2006, you know, we begin taking things in thematically. You know, we're looking at the Iraq War and 2001 and just wondering, you know, looking at dominoes falling in succession and then wondering about patterns and synchronicity. But so anyway, in 2008, I met all these people that shared the same language. We're able to communicate, and 42 became such a huge sink for so many people, you know, especially the Winnipeg guys. They connected it to the Jupiter glyph. Naturally, you start with Douglas Adams, The Meaning of Life, the Universe, and Everything is 42. And I've heard that the question that he used to get to the answer 42 was Bob Dylan's song Blowin' in the Wind. How many roads must a man walk down before he becomes a man? And the answer is 42. It's a joke. But if you start doing any research, you realize that 42 go way deeper than Douglas Adams. I think there's the 42 law in Sinclair Lewis's Alice in Wonderland, I think. And there's also the 42 laws of Mott as far as the Egyptian, your heart needs to be lighter than a feather. There's certain strictures. I think Kelvin Halcott is the researcher who's done a lot of the good 42 research. But for me, I just end up connecting 42 with the Father and Jupiter. So I think that really rings true, that what Jake Kotze and Jim Saunders found regarding the Jupiter glyph looking like the numeral 42 is correct, but that the 42 ends up reflecting the nature of fatherhood. And so for me, this is, you know, like the shining communicates the state of where we're at, that where it's the patriarchy, it's the godfather, you know, it's dog eat dog, and that somehow we need to rethink the nature of the father.
Rethink the nature of the father. Well, it feels like the father has kind of, in a way, abandoned humanity. We're all, you know, from the religious point of view, we were all kind of looking for where God went. It's the missing father when I think about it.
You might have something in common with Doug pointed out. You know, I don't know if you know this, Doug was actually one of the original members of the Sinkhole blog with Jake Kotze and them, and where they kept saying Jupiter and the idea that Jupiter, even in the mythology, is not a very good dad. He goes out and cheats on his wife all the time and is pretty brutal to his kids and all this sort of stuff. And we had this connection. And I think, Doug, I think it was you who pointed out that Aleister Crowley, he said that 42 was sort of the fingerprint of the demiurge. That, you know, the reason you would see this 42 everywhere is it's sort of this trademark of the blind bad god or the bad father. So that's when you say the father seems absent, that has been an attribution that's been made before.
Yeah.
I think that if anyone did that research, Alan, that was Jason Barrera, and he should be credited with that.
Jason Barrera should be credited for being a freaking genius. I want to go on record here. So Jason Barrera deserves a ton of credit for being one of the most brilliant men that I've met. And there's not enough nice things I could say about him.
He might not even be a human being.
I have my doubts.
let's talk a little bit about the contribution that you guys have made to the sync books, if you will, and some of the stuff that you've been writing about, and if there's some, you know, why you wanted to write what you did write in the books, etc. There's, you know, a lot to talk about there. But how about if we begin with you, Bill?
Okay, well, I got into contact with Alan Green through a great gentleman named John Kidd regarding this project I put together. Henrik, have you seen the Dark Side of the Rainbow, where you play Wizard of Oz with the Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd?
Yeah, I've seen reference to it. I haven't gone through that the process of it, but yeah, I definitely heard about it. Yeah.
Well, that's a perfect entry point to this, in that, you know, I certain people that I know who have watched that, there's usually three reactions. There's usually one is no reaction, one is, oh, that was kind of cool, and there's this fringe or this hyper minority of people who just become absolutely fascinated and obsessed by it. And when I talk to those people, we both kind of share notes, and we recognize that we watched that pairing. I watched it maybe 5, 6, 7 times within a week. I just, it was something that completely spoke to me and fascinated me. And I watched that arrangement sometime around, I'd say about 2001, 2002. Fast forward a bunch of years later, and on a whim, I went to a movie theater and I listened to Dark Side of the Moon on headphones while I watched a Harry Potter movie. It was a new release. I had not seen the movie before. I just wanted to kind of, I don't know, throw a snowball in the face of you can see what you want to see theory. Basically, I wanted it to be boring, and I wanted to leave the theater after 10 minutes to prove, I don't know, some point to myself. Ultimately, I ended up watching the rest of that movie in the theater, and once again was completely fascinated how the images on the screen coupled with the music did not equate into a boring or bland experience. It was just as exciting and fascinating as anything I'd ever witnessed. Flash forward a few more years, after a lot of study into synchronicity and becoming completely obsessed with Stanley Kubrick, and seeing how Pink Floyd's album Metal shares a really nice overlay with 2001. And there's a whole bunch of mythology or theory based on Roger Waters' relationship with Stanley Kubrick. But sharing this sort of investigation into the subject matter with Mark LeClaire, who is also an author in Sync Book 2, and just a brilliant mind, and who has written, I think, some of the most definitive essays on Stanley Kubrick out there. Our shared investigation revealed that, in our opinions, and according to our fascinations, three specific Stanley Kubrick albums, three specific Stanley Kubrick films, overlaid almost, well, not perfectly, but thematically, symbolically, matched up with three Pink Floyd albums. LeClaire had an overarching theory called the tensor, which is very mathematical, and it was something I was trying to help him flesh out. And at some point, that partnership disintegrated. I just think maybe of exhaustion and too much stress and too much time obsessing over the same subject. But at some point, I unlocked what I feel is just an incredibly marvelous piece of evidence into this field. It's a mashup, as you would say, of 2001, The Shining, and Pink Floyd's album, The Wall. Now, what's specific about this arrangement is that obviously you have to watch two movies at one time while listening to an album. There's a specific starting point in the album, but it finishes at the exact last song based on that playlist. I go into the details of this in the Sync Book chapter that I wrote. It's chapter 23, and I also go into this at length at my blog, which is ayahuasca.blogspot.com. That's spelled I-A-H-A-U-S-C-a.blogspot.com. But it is a it takes it to a different dimension, because you have two movies playing simultaneously with an album instead of just one movie and an album. And I guess I'll finish up this rap by saying it really isn't about hearing me say, watch these things, and then going inside your head saying, I've seen those movies, now that album, oh, I see how that could work. It's actually about going through the process of actually constructing the mechanism in which to view this. And it takes a specific edition of 2001. You need to have a TV and another source to watch another DVD. You have to have an MP3 player to listen to the music. You have to press play at a specific time, at exactly the right time. And if you put in all that work, and it is work, and it is confusing at times, and it is frustrating to get them all started at the exact moment. But in the process of doing that, it creates a certain kind of doubt, and it creates a certain kind of questioning of, am I wasting my time, and am I crazy that I'm actually going through all of this? And that's part of the fuel that unlocks the magic of this experience. And, you know, I'm not really worried about the arguments of whether or not there's a true engineering or architecture behind it. And I'm not worried about the argument of whether or not it's good or it's bad. All I ask is that if you go through this, is it beautiful? Because I think it is beautiful. It is a way to reconfigure and retransform pre-existing works of art into something new and something beautiful, something that your mind can't imagine until it is actually in the presence of the thing itself. And more beauty is something that is always a positive for this world. So that's really kind of how I sell it. Now, the final part of it is okay, if you see the beauty of it and you're a type like me who sees patterns and becomes obsessed with it, well, you will fall into it if you are inclined to investigate whether or not there was some engineering and some foreknowledge into this, then you're in luck, because the rabbit hole on this one goes so deep and takes you down so many twists and turns. I just think it's just an absolutely exciting entryway into the world of synchronicity and to the many parallel dimensions and worlds that synchronicity offers.
So what is going on in the deeper analysis, I guess, Bill, in that process and furthermore, who discovered this? Who's been sitting here and putting on three different sources at the same time, starting in right at this right at the spot to hit this kind of a sweet spot of combinations, if you will?
Well, you know, I'll bring up two points. A, I call it the Kubrick Transformer in reference to Maurice Cotterell's work with the Mayan Transformer, where he takes photographs of a jade mask made, you know, 1500 years ago, and by overlaying images of the mask, it unlocks a story. There are certain symbolic images of animals and certain other things that emerge from the overlaying of these two images that seem to suggest that the design of this jade mask was meant to be viewed in this way, which just seems absurd, because where would the technology be to unlock the mysteries of this mask? The technology didn't exist until many, many centuries later. You can, you know, go crazy trying to think make sense of, well, the evidence of the overlaying really seems to speak to the culture and to the whole Mayan world, but yet the way that you unlock that story seems impossible and seems absurd to have even created something like that. But maybe it happened on a level that was unconscious or super conscious, but there was an intent that found its way into the piece of work. That's kind of the way I approach it with Stanley Kubrick's mind and the music of Pink Floyd, is that these people were so close together. They were living through a very intense and incredibly exciting and furious time of experimentation in science and art and technology, and that they were pouring everything into their work, and that the reason why these three movies seem to merge together into one product is because their minds were so far up there or so into their time that it's more of a reflection of their consciousness or their cognitive dimensions. As far as how I discovered it, I document the email relationship I had going back and forth with Mark LeClaire, chipping away at our discoveries by playing the albums and playing the movies. And there's a pretty distinct moment where I made the decision to take it up to another level. And I have to tell you, that moment when I did, it was as if I've heard the entire universe applaud in a standing ovation. It was that crystal clear of a moment for me, and it's something that I treasure for the rest of my life. It was so affirming that convincing other people really, that was sort of icing on the cake. The thing that I witnessed when I finally put those puzzle pieces together was worth it alone. And that's how I kind of connect my reverence for Terrence McKenna is the time wave for him was not the time wave that I have. Sharing the time wave with other people was icing on the cake. I'm sure that his whole experience of birthing the time wave was sort of his way of almost birthing a child. It was his chance to experience something that was very rare and very, I don't want to say religious or spiritual, but it's in that dimension. And I just feel lucky that this kind of artistic creation I was able to take part in. It's something I never expected. And the fact that I get to share it with readers on my blog, the fact that Alan Green invited me to share it in Sync Book 2, the fact that I get to share it with your listeners today, you know, is just icing on the cake. And I just hope people have an open enough mind and an afternoon to check it out.
Ah, so you're the mind behind it. Well, some people might think, well, what the hell is he talking about? So can you give a hint about what people will experience when they do this experiment? Or will that give it away? Will it even ruin it, perhaps?
Well, it speaks to how familiar you are with the album The Wall and with the movies 2001 and The Shining. It's meant to be an experience where there's no audio from the films. The music from The Wall acts as the soundtrack, the complete and total soundtrack. The themes expressed visually, the themes expressed musically and lyrically, as well as certain moments that defy any explanation. It works as a piece of art and a film and an album all at the same time. And like I said, I don't really go into too much exegetical explanation of it, much like Kubrick didn't really give too much explanation for 2001 or The Shining. He just sort of leaves it there for you to kind of grapple with. The only problem is it's a lot more difficult to actually take in a viewing of this thing because you have to put so many components together.
If I may, just real quick, I have seen his arrangement, and to answer your question of like kind of a hint is things like, you know, when a phone rings in the movie, there's a phone ringing in the album. There's like moments like where a door slams. There are certain sound effects in The Wall soundtrack that line up so perfectly that in watching it, there are moments where you forget that that audio isn't coming from the movie.
Ah, interesting. Douglas, have you gone through this as well, seen it?
Well, yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones. After the first Sync book came out, there was in early 2012, there was an event in New York City where a bunch of the authors came together and we put on a show. There was Radio 8 Ball, we had dancers and poetry, and I read a section from my chapter of the Sync book. And one of the things that was shown was a segment from Bill's Kubrick Transformer. It was something. And that's a whole nother little realm there of I think they're being called now sync-ups, where if you take two pieces of media with similar intentions, the intention is enough for the two things to align in really strange ways, fascinating ways too. And I think they've explored a lot of those in Always Record. Which one is it? The White Album. What do you guys call it? Rosemary's White Album, baby.
Rosemary's White Baby album. Yeah, there's a guy who we do Always Record with. His name is David Plate, and Will Morgan, Doug's co-host, also plays with this. But I have to say, I think David Plate is sort of like the master of this art form. He is a DJ, and maybe that explains it, because it's sort of like, it's kind of like DJing, where you're remixing found, it's almost like found art, right? You're like taking a movie, taking an album, and David Plate does some amazing work. You can see some of these videos on his Vimeo channel. If you go to thesyncbook.com, click on the video tab. There are links to David's Vimeo channel. You can see some of these films that he's put together. But I know Bill has kind of convinced David, in talking to David recently, that they're both of the agreement that it's sort of like you could be shown something, but there's part of the magic is in finding the ingredients, finding the timings yourself. And we now get some emails from listeners of the show who write us up and say, hey, I tried this movie and this album, and you're not going to believe what happened. And it's just interesting to see people playing with it. And for me, I'll be honest, I don't really watch a lot of movies. So this is not the thing that speaks to me in particular. But what pleases me to no end is that people are reclaiming their media, playing with media, and becoming their own authors of this stuff. Which to me, synchronicity is about becoming the author of your own life. Well, why not be the author of your own media intake?
Well, indeed. I remember it was a long time ago, early days of the web for me, anyway, 2000. Came across the, it was called the sinking ship, and they did this piece on, I think it was Radiohead's OK Computer and Fight Club, and also had some. I actually never tried it. For some reason, don't ask me why, but I'm going to check that out and see what they have. And if it's comparable to that, I think they tried it with Planet TLX as well, their previous album, but for some reason, OK Computer and Fight Club just lined up perfectly. Any other example, guys, you can mention?
Andres Jones has one he's calling The Lifehouse Matrix, which is a fascinating study too, where he's, I can't explain it because I don't understand Lifehouse. Alan, could you take from there?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Andras Jones, who was just on Radio 314, I believe in the last week or two, he has one where he takes the movie The Matrix and a Who album that never actually came to fruition. It was something that Pete Townshend had worked on and tried to put together, and it just, the album never, he had this grand vision for this like mega album that he wanted to do, and it never really happened. And a lot of those songs ended up on other albums throughout the years, but that album never really came out. But he went through what Pete Townshend's plans were for what the album that he wanted to make, and all these different songs that were released on different things, and pieced together the album as it was originally kind of envisioned, and plays that. So this is even weirder. You can't have intent, because how many people could have even heard this arrangement before? This is the point, you know, we're talking about synchronicity, right? This is where this wins me over. As I said, this isn't necessarily my thing here, but this is why it wins me over. Because when you watch something like this, and it seems like someone had to plan this, like if it times out so perfectly, you would think someone made this film or made this album as a score to this film. When something arranges or lines up so perfectly, and you think to yourself, man, that's got to be intentional, but there's really no way that that's intentional. This is kind of how I feel, you know, we talk about James Shelby Downard or somebody like that, when someone says, ah, this is obviously evidence of a conspiracy, and I'm like, I don't know anymore. You know, it's like, I see so many things that there's no way that anyone was consciously aware of it, and that these things line up in such interesting ways. And just to be clear, I'm not trying to muddy the waters. I don't want to be like, oh, it's just a coincidence. You know, it's like, I think I said this to you last time. Like, if there's put options on an airplane, you know, if there's, you know, asking NORAD to stand down, I'm not trying to say that's a coincidence. I'm just saying that some of this stuff where we would think our gut reaction is this has to be intentional, a lot of this stuff, what I've learned over the last number of years researching this is it's not, and you know Chris Knowles, you had Chris Knowles on your show. He makes the point, and I think this is what Bill was trying to suggest. Chris Knowles makes the point, we shouldn't use the terms, is it intentional or unintentional, but perhaps conscious or unconscious. Like that there might be some higher, like what Anthony Peake calls the daemon, there might be some aspect of ourselves that understands a sort of non-linear approach, or are we tapping into the collective unconscious? All the different theories you could throw out there of what it could be, of why this might work, or why we might have some access to this information, but we're not fully conscious of it.
Indeed. I would question, human nature as well on top of it, that what we do create right now is also fairly homogenized, if you know what I mean. I mean, most movies, comparatively what we can do and what we could explore, it tends to go in a very similar pattern. It has, you know, the ratio of the introduction that you know, begs the question or shows what the drama is supposed to go, and then you have a deepening of the you get to know the characters, and then you have the climax of the movie, and then, you know, going down a little bit. I'm saying, and even an album can kind of follow that pattern, if you will. So some of it might be okay, you know, it's because of whatever we touch, whatever we're doing right now, there are similarities within it. But I guess where the real question mark would come in for me is also what is the message that's coming through. And maybe, as you said before, Alan, and you other guys as well, that's also a very individual thing. So we can't be having an objective judge here and say, you know, this is more important than this sink, for example.
Right. Like, as far as what your point, I mean, it's true. If you take a film scripting class, they're going to tell you, oh, you should have, by around page 30, you should have some major crisis in the character's life or things like that. Hollywood and the record industry, they are highly formulaic. However, the only time that I've made one of these movie-film combinations was after speaking to Bill and David for a long time, and I was just like, okay, that's interesting. One night I tried watching, do you know, there was an old comic strip called Little Nemo? It's this kid who, like, goes to sleep, and he has these fantastic adventures in his dream world. And there was an animated movie that was made out of it, and I couldn't find the Japanese version. I could only find the English language version. And usually my experience has been when you have the English voice actors are very unpleasant to listen to. I don't know why. English voice actors really do not do a good job. Or it's just something. So it's an issue I have. So I was trying to find a Japanese version. I couldn't find the English version. My wife and I are watching it. We're like 10 minutes into this, and I was like, I cannot listen to these characters' voices. This is so annoying. But the movie was gorgeous. Beautiful, beautiful animation. I'm just a fan of the visual art. Mm. So I was like, all right, here's a chance for me to play with one of these things. But I didn't have anything handy, so I just put my iTunes on shuffle function and just let some stuff play. And there came, I'm telling you, every 5 minutes, my wife and I would sit bolt up out of our chair and go, oh my God, that is so perfect. Oh, what? 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 And it's like, I can't even do it justice to explain. And it's not like, oh, mild, thematic, anything. Like, I'm saying the lyrics are describing what the character is doing on the screen. And this happened through the full length of the movie. And there's something, the big question here would be, as Bill and David say, there are some movies that just work better than others. But as someone who's more interested in just synchronicity as a more broader subject matter, for me, the question is, are we, as the artists who are tapping into synchronicity, are we attracting this more? Is this something? I think, Doug, I might have heard you say the other day that like people at your job, you'll notice when you're around, people are saying, oh, that's so weird. Like they're having these weird coincidences. When I moved to North Carolina, I started having that experience. I got this job and every day I'd come into work and the people around me would go, oh my God, the weirdest thing just happened to me. As if like, and my question is, does this happen to you all the time or does this happen when I'm around? Am I some weird, you know,
you're a sync node, Alan. You're a sync node, yeah.
It's a good question. I don't have an answer to it.
Doug?
I say yes, Alan. 100% yes. That's why Kubrick had to move out of the United States and hide away into his little farm and his yard, because the weirdest shit would happen around Mr. Kubrick.
My page 30 crisis, Alan, that happened last year on 42 Minutes was whether or not we were somehow advocating a philosophy of schizophrenia, where by opening up the natural filters that kind of protect us on one level, are we, you know, I went through this whole dilemma of wondering what we were really selling. And so, you know, in, I think how I would address you regarding people, I think people are more comfortable sharing their weirdness with me. It's not that they experience more weirdness around me. They just know that it's safe to say, isn't that coincidence strange? You know, I'm not going to judge them because it's kind of what I like to do.
Yeah. Well, this was my point a little bit with the internet as well, with this, the kind of the doubt that comes with any technology or, you know, quote unquote progress in any capacity, that are we ready for what the possibilities are with this, of where it will be taking us? For the first time, it's like an unfiltered, conscious and unconscious mind that's just out there available to tap into and pour into, and anything can become an obsession if we have an obsessive personality. Anything can become, you know, dangerous if we have a property to, you know, let's say even for schizophrenia, as you pointed out, Doug, that this rather maybe fully enables something that we already have within us. Maybe this is just something that makes us bloom, if you will, both on the negative side and the positive side for us as individuals.
But I also recognize, having, you know, the internet, we have a lot of people in our lives that we can watch. And I noticed that the schizophrenics, or people that have less filters, say, they are so much more aware of things that are moving through. You can see, and that's at some point in time, somebody's going to be able to look at Facebook and they'll tell you exactly, you know, what's really happening, because you can see it affect everyone all at the same time. But then for me, the canaries in the coal mine tend to be the people with less filters than the people I call norms. Norms, you know, operate in normal consciousness. And I think our, you know, community and group is playing with less boundaries or less filters, but we still have, so there's a level of control. And, you know, to connect back to the psychedelic, so we're doing the same thing. We're having that psychedelic experience without the drugs, and hopefully, or possibly, teaching people how to, you know, enter into that headspace.
There's a famous quote concerning James Joyce and his relationship to his daughter, who was a schizophrenic, and he was wondering about the differences between his work and the world that his daughter was experiencing with her illness. And I don't remember if it was Carl Jung, if anyone remembers the quote, but they said, the difference, James, is that while you're swimming, she's drowning. And I might have paraphrased that a little bit, but that the waters that James Joyce was swimming in, effectively, productively, artistically, were the same waters that his daughter was drowning in and were killing her. And that the schizophrenic space can be lethal if you don't have the right equipment or you don't know how to swim. I would simply say that the internet is full-fledged scuba gear to the swimmer, but it's like cement shoes to the schizophrenic. It's just going to take you down to the bottom and you're not going to be able to get up. And I think this is what LSD was in the 60s. A very intelligent brain like Timothy Leary could take LSD or psilocybin and completely revolutionize and hyperdimensionalize his thinking and be very productive. But for a 16-year-old girl who had it slipped into her can of Coke at a party, she could completely lose her mind and never come back. It's just odd that this technology and these substances have the ability to do two different things. I guess much like nuclear technology can be used for harm, or it can be used maybe not so much explicitly, but it can be used for benefit.
Yeah, that's right. Does it help if one is stoned when doing an experiment on the movie and the music's, you know, similarities, or trying to find that sync in it, or mushrooms or anything else? In other words, does a drug, a version of something like that, would enhance the experience? Anyone who wants to pick up on that?
Marijuana, for sure. I think Absolutely. It's the training wheels. I think once you... Marijuana is like a technology. You know, the human body can't process marijuana, the plant, until it has fire. You need heat to either cook the substance or to light it for smoke. But without fire, you can't use marijuana. So it takes a certain amount of intelligence to be able to utilize the technology involved with that plant. And I definitely think it's a training wheel into accessing a more powerful lens. It really isn't the plant. It's really just unlocking your conscious abilities, and it allows you to see things in a different way. I don't think it's 100% the rule, but it helps a hell of a lot.
Yeah, if I may, I mean, to speak completely honestly, I went through a period where I was experimenting just out of total curiosity. I was experimenting with guessing cards. Like, my wife would take a deck of cards and pull one out, and I would guess what it is. And I know without a doubt, I mean, I didn't keep the most scientific of records, but I can tell you that if I did it sober, I would have every now and then get one right. But when I would smoke marijuana, my percentage went way up. And I think anyone listening to this who's not a complete naive fool knows it's not like I smoked marijuana and imagined I got the right card. It's not that kind of substance. You know, it's a much slighter intoxication than that. It's not that I imagined something, but whatever it did, it was able to shift my perception enough that my accuracy of guessing those cards, of being able to get into some weird headspace of why that would even be possible, I don't know. I'm not the scientist to answer that, but absolutely it benefited. And as an artist, I can say definitely it's a door to something else. I think it has the potential for abuse just like anything else, but I think if you're honest with the plant and what it has to say, I don't think there's a big danger there. I think it's very, very helpful.
So, any thoughts on why that is? Any guy here want to pick up on this? What does it remove? Blockages, filters, or things that we are, you know, the primary things that we have in our mind, etc. We need to kind of take this away a little bit and relax, end up in a position where we can kind of get more in tune with the psychic field, shall we say, than everyday life. Any thoughts?
I would personally say that when a human being is confronted with danger, there's a fight or flight reaction that runs on adrenaline, and it makes your decision-making skills hopefully sharper. It makes your senses more heightened, and this is just a completely natural, organic reaction. When the human being found its way into incorporating cannabis into its routine, you are confronted with something new that is alien to your regular consciousness. And whatever organic process happens in your body, I think it's much like the fight or flight. There is a heightened awareness that increases certain components of your senses that you just don't normally access in your everyday life. And I think it's really as simple as that.
Is this for everyone? Can everyone handle the combination of what we're talking about here?
I don't even think everyone can handle synchronicity. Is what I've been taught. I mean, I'm being serious. Like, I went from when I first started putting up the sync book and saying, you know, this was something where I felt like this has been a wonderful door for me. And then I started getting, as a sort of new face for a synchronicity movement, right? I started getting a lot more input from people that I had never met before. Henrik, after doing your show, I mean, I got email from people who were not handling this well, you know, people who were struggling. And I'm not talking about, you know, people that were on psychedelics. I'm talking about people who were overwhelmed by synchronicities and didn't know what to make of it, mm-hmm. thought they were going crazy. And I had people write to me saying, like, you know, I don't know what to do, and I'm thinking about committing suicide and all this sort of stuff. Yeah.
Wow. And well, that's no good, folks. We've always said this. Take caution. Take precautions. Yeah. Go slowly forward, etc. You know, this is... all right. Well, go ahead, Alan.
Well, exactly. I mean, so this is... It opened me up from my own personal experience and the community of people that I know to what were the people that we were reaching? What was the experience of the, you know, man on the street? And I don't mean to sound elitist in any way there. I'm just saying like the people who I wouldn't, wasn't normally speaking to. I was speaking to 20 something, you know.
And there's newcomers, Alan, all the time as well that discover it and they just kind of come into it. And see, this is the difference. Well, I don't want to mean to cut you off. Remember where you were there, but you know, we have people coming. You know, when we, you know, a lot of people have been talking about this since, you know, 2004 and 5. And then, you know, when we did shows with Jake Kotze and Steve Wilner, and that was 2006 and 7. And I mean, there is a kind of a process to that, if you know what I mean. And it's, you know, a field, if you will, in certain regards have developed forward. But a lot of people have been coming on, adding on to their work and stuff like that. It's been like a slow progression. But if you have a newcomer just kind of jumping into the deep end of the pool, I definitely understand that can be completely overwhelming because there's just so much out there. And this is, again, I'm back to what we talked about earlier about the just availability of everything on the web. It can become an obsession to the point where you can't control it, basically.
Absolutely. That's why you need the Sync Book.
to guide you through the experience, yeah.
Just turn to the Libyan Sybil, and, you know, it's a nice, comforting piece. She eases you into it. You'll just feel nice and...
It's true. And I noticed you remember Sybil actually wrote in that chapter, she said, if at some point you feel like you need psychiatric help, you should get it. And I remember when I first read that sentence in there, and I was like, that's kind of weird. And I get it now. I totally, like, I didn't get it when I first read it. I was like, that's a weird thing. Like, is this how I open the book with someone saying, and then, I'm really glad she said that. And, you know, I have very mixed feelings about mainstream psychiatric care. So I don't know if that's the greatest thing to suggest to someone either. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like I said, I've been very humbled by this experience of realizing that not everyone's ready. And I really, really hope I don't come across, and it's not my intent to say we can handle this, but not everyone can. But as you said, it's a process. And I can admit straight up to you right now, there have been times where it's been overwhelming for me. There have been times where synchronicity sometimes reflects back to things too that you don't want to hear, that you don't want to understand about yourself, or you don't want to listen. You know, some darker recesses of your mind that you don't want to acknowledge, and sometimes these synchronicities smack you in the face and say, no, you can complain about, you know, the NSA, or you can complain about the Bilderbergers, but you can be this big of a jerk too. And obviously not on the scale of, you know, mass genocides or things like that. But just to say that, you know, the heart of darkness is in all men. And sometimes you don't want to acknowledge that or whatever it might be. And there have been times it's been really overwhelming. And I'm so grateful that I found this community, because not only is it a community where we can share research together, but it's a community when it gets to be overwhelming, I can reach out to people. And we don't always do this publicly, but there's a few researchers that I email with privately. I know even, you know, Steve Wilner, Ezra, and Jason Horsley. Jason Horsley had started something back, I want to say, around 2005 that was called, like, Sweeta. Doug, maybe you know more about this. But it was basically, like, a private forum where they would discuss these things. And it's like, is this, you know, are we handling this? Do we got this? And these are the guys who, you know, they go out and say, hey, check this out. But even privately, they're wrestling with this. And we all do. And I am so grateful to this community, and particularly certain members like Michael Schacht, Douglas Bowles, Jason Barrera, Bill and David. I get to speak to them every Thursday. And this is catharsis for me to actually get to do this. If I may just quickly turn this to something, is like, when I say I made the it's a joke, but I mean it seriously, it's like the idea of integrating conspiracy and synchronicity. Sometimes I think people aren't ready for it. There was something earlier when we had the Sandy Hook shooting, and this, what I would consider a synchronicity, blew up. It just went viral across the internet of everyone seeing that there was in one frame of the Batman movie, it said Sandy Hook. And everyone freaked out that, oh my God, this is all part of a plan. And I'm not trying to imply that there weren't shady things about Sandy Hook. I'm just saying, if we're going to base even let's take synchronicity out of it. If we're conspiracy theorists or alternative researchers, whatever term you want, if we are gonna, if that's our evidence of a conspiracy is one frame of a movie, that's pretty poor evidence, and we got to step up the game. But we also have to be sure we have the proof or can do something to say, does that really even work psychologically? Can you subliminally insert one frame of a into a movie and make people kill somebody? You know, whatever it might be. Yeah. But honestly, I deal with people writing to me all the time to say, oh, I found this weird synchronicity in this movie and this world event. It's what I do. Every day, this is what water I'm swimming in.
Yeah.
If someone wrote to me and said, oh, in one frame of Batman movie, there was it said Sandy Hook, I'd go, huh, okay. Like, it wouldn't even be that big of a synchronicity to me, let alone the thing to go viral across the web. So when that happened, that was a big red flag for me. And I'm thinking, are people... again, careful how I say it, but like, are people ready for this way of thinking if they're still trapped in the there has to be an explanation for it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah, it is.
It sounds like we're going in the direction with that kind of situation where, you know, how they took out phone numbers from movies and TV shows because people kept dialing them. It's like they're going to have to take out all references to real cities and real places so that there's no confusion or no conspiratorial eruption.
Well, but see what's happened in the movies lately, though, is the reverse of that. You have like Wolf Blitzer of CNN, you know, showing up in the movie as himself, reporting on a news story in the movie. The reality in the movie is blending even more these days, isn't it? The you know, you Absolutely. See daily, you know, the Daily Show shows up, news people, yada yada, etc. They're playing themselves. It's like that's what I'm getting at here. Again, the media environment, it's like people are so immersed in it and lack the perspective and take a step back from it that it actually, I mean, we know that it shapes people's, you know, political mind, their sociological mind. Everything is like shaped by this environment, and that is what we need to question on top of everything that we're doing.
Absolutely, which is why I say it's not mutually exclusive. I think we have to have an understanding of all these different areas. And if we can, you know, this is like a Robert Anton Wilson type thing, the different reality tunnels, where there is a truth or there is a value, let's say, to each of these understandings. And to me, there's an importance to understanding how, you know, when you could say propaganda to someone who's completely not interested in anything conspiratorial, and they're like, oh, that guy's crazy. But does anyone deny that there are marketing executives who are trying to put, you know, product placement in movies or commercial jingles to get you? You had a guest on your show, I can't think of his name, who called it colonization of the mind. And I love that expression because it's so appropriate. So there's definitely that, you know, if I say to you the Kit Kat song, you can hear it playing in your head. They have colonized a little portion of your brain that you can recall that commercial jingle.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I said this to someone the other day, at the same time, what synchronicity shows me is they can't control your set and setting, because what happens if I have a four-year-old son with the flu and a Kit Kat commercial comes on and he's vomiting profusely? I might develop an association between that food product and his vomit, or some, just for example, that I might be adversely associated to that product. So there are certain things they cannot control. I feel like whenever... there was like these movies that are put out by the government. They put out that movie called, something Badge of Valor or whatever it was. It was some like Navy SEALs movie they put out. And it was actually like one of the first ones they really admit, no, this is a government-made movie. And it was sickening to me, to this war propaganda. And at the same time, Jake Kotze does a blog post about it where he's showing all these other weird synchronicities having to do with like South Park and Jennifer Lopez. And he just turned it into something funny. And it's not to say that that's necessarily a laughing matter, that war propaganda is a laughing matter, but to say that it all depends on how you want to take that in. Do you want to take that in and say, yeah, I want to go kill some brown people, or do you want to take that in and turn it into a joke about tacos?
Well, what I think as well, guys, is that this, at the same time, I don't think that this is something new or a recent phenomena of human beings not being, you know, mentally able to cope with certain things. I think it's due to the connectivity that we can track the frequency of this and be in connection with more people, and therefore to us it seems like it's something, it's an epidemic perhaps, or it's something that's on the rise. I mean, again, Lauren Coleman does the Twilight language thing and the copycat effect and all that stuff. So it's certainly there, and in that regard, sure, it might be spreading, but also, as we always need to keep in mind, that with the numbers and the statistics, we don't get always the true story either. And us as individuals in this, you know, big game and of the media environment, it might seem perhaps overwhelming to us, or with enough examples, it seems like to us that it is an epidemic. But in context to how many billions of people there are on this planet, is it really that much? If you guys see what I'm getting at.
That is an excellent question, but I think this is the trend. I think that Sandy Hook thing said to me, and there have been a few other examples like that, but that in particular raised a big flag for me that this is not going away. You look at a site like Vigilant Citizen, how popular that site is, and they're basically being told, when you see this symbol, it means this. And then you have, yeah, you know, your slew of other websites like that are saying, if you see this, it means this. So people are getting into a reactionary mode. People are getting told a million different things. And obviously we contribute to that because we might say, oh, it means, you know, but what we're doing is saying, hey, it could also mean this, or let's look at the different options. And I think, as much as I feel sometimes that really promoting synchronicity or this heavy synchronicity mindset to people can potentially be a little dangerous if people aren't well grounded, I also think what we're doing is very important, because if the connectivity continues, which the internet is not going away unless, you know, some government, major government shutdown or something like that, but the trend does not seem to be slowing down. I might be one of the last people without a smartphone, but I think I'm one of very few. So to say that this is not slowing down, and I think the more connected people get, the more they're going to notice these things. And I think when things get really strange, you have to kind of, I'm hoping that we can be there to say, hey, it's all good. This is, in a weird sort of way, this is normal, and kind of help people through that process.
Yeah. And there's a lot of positive stories with all this too. People who find a greater meaning in the reality that they find themselves in, and an awakening process, a discovery of the connectivity of, you know, how they're the central node point in their own lives, how everything is, you know, evolving around them in a way. And just a greater realization, basically, of what is going on. And I mean, that's a tremendous gift, in times like these. That's what I think, anyway.
Yeah, and I think what Alan has done when he's put together the SyncBook Press, and with all the different ways in which he can get different thinkers into your consciousness, either through a book, through a video, through 42 minutes, always record, or a new show that Alan's producing called Synchronize. You know, you're going to find these shows and this presence now when you go out there on the internet. And when you're looking for a different angle on some of these crazier occurrences, I hope that people will come to trust the voices associated with SyncBook Press. Because I found them to be the most open-minded and the most critical, willing to look at the information for what it is from a journalistic point of view and not from a reactionary point of view. And I know from my own life it's been very balancing, and I've come to depend on it in a certain way, the way people depend on their most trusted friends. And I hope that that kind of relationship is something that people who don't know about SyncBook can discover.
And also, again, just go back, so it doesn't sound like it's a, because I don't think that's fair to the subject matter, that it's all this kind of fear related to it because we're in the realm of the mind and all that. Just compare it to any other subjects that human beings are involved in out there. Politics, whether or not people are like violently, you know, at each other's throat in terms of the politics out there, and people who are political leaders are turned into murderers and genocide. And look at the violence associated with sports, for example, and sports fans. And with all these, with whatever mankind is turning, there will always be people who can't handle whatever it's going on. So I rather think it's a component and reflection of how we are as human beings, as opposed to just that it's the subject's fault, if you guys are following what I'm getting at here.
I hear you, absolutely.
And I'm glad you say that, because, like I said, I've just sort of come, my experience has been to put, all I really wanted to do was put a little disclaimer on it. I didn't mean for it to become a big focus of the conversation, but to say is, if you're unsure of your, if you're on thin ice, take it easy. But I think I think listeners of Red Ice, I think the people who contact us, we have brilliant input from people. We have a Facebook page and a Facebook group where people contribute. I get emails from people where I am so impressed with how well people handle this information, how the new ideas they bring to the table. And, you said, you're always getting new people coming in. And sometimes it's the new people who bring you the most interesting take on it of all.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we get bogged down in, some of the nitty gritty, and someone else comes in with a brand new, fresh set of eyes. And this is so refreshing to me, and I definitely don't want to paint synchronicity in a dark light, because to me, it has been incredibly grounding, incredibly uplifting, and it's become a huge part of my life that really brings me a very great source of joy.
Very good. Bill, Douglas, any comments on this?
Not to ask us here, but I think Alan was the right man at the right time to kind of connect a sort of amorphous community and give it a little bit more of a more presence. And I just think he doesn't get enough credit for that. So he's a good man, Alan Green.
You've done great work with the books, Alan, and tying all this together for sure. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. But what about Doug? Are you still with us? Doug and I actually had similar ideas around the same time. We were both thinking that we needed to kind of start bringing this loose-knit community together, and I want to sort of acknowledge his input here as well.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah. It's the collaborative drive in the community. As we research our own reality trundle, if that's what you want to use, it's so hard not to share and then want to do it kind of together, compare notes. It was just natural to form group blogs. And there's something fun about with Syncbook Press that it's kind of an old media company. But it's mixing the newest of the new and the old together, and then giving people the space to really have a voice. So bravo, Alan. I applaud you as well.
Very good. Alan, what is next for you, Alan? What's on the agenda?
I would really like to finish the book that I've been working on.
Yeah.
We are putting out I am working on two other books, helping edit two other books. There's one that's going to be coming out about the Gospel of Thomas from a yogic perspective. We'll be putting that out. I'm also working with Fraterex on the Secret War Inside Freemasonry. But I am really trying to get, for the end of this year, get out a book called Suicide Kings, which I talked a little bit about, which is basically exploring JFK, exploring 9/11, and exploring the quote-unquote death of Osama bin Laden. And really, basically, it's a study of synchronicity and archetypes, how they emerge in real life, and showing some of the gray areas, showing some of, hey, this could be intentional, this I don't think is, and let's just kind of examine it. And basically, if you've read any of a Jake Kotze post or seen a Steve Wilner video, what they used to do is take an archetype or a sync thread and examine it you know, for the length of that video or that blog post. Well, I noticed that throughout my blog, what I was doing was I kept coming up with the same theme over and over and over again. And it took me a good few years to realize that there was a thematic through line in almost every synchronicity or every blog, not every synchronicity, but every synchronicity that I bothered blogging about. You couldn't blog about them all, but, you know, that there was definitely a theme to my work. And I realized this is something that is very important to me, what James Shelby Downard called the king kill, what I associate with ego death and psychedelic experiences and all the weird ways that when something is emerging in the timeline, it happens, it seems to echo on the personal level, on the interpersonal level, on the geopolitical level, and that it's there's very often some of the bigger world events, the more popular world events, you can see how it's really obvious that this is taking place on all these levels at one time. And for me, what I'd really like to kind of get people thinking about is how often does this really happen? You know, it's very easy to see an event like 9/11, but what if we talk about also some of the smaller events and how the same thing is constantly happening? So not only really delving deep into a specific archetype set, but also trying to show the interconnection or the way these archetypes manifest in many different levels of reality.
Douglas, let me ask you the same. What's next for you?
I am really excited by the next piece of writing that I'm going to do, because I'm going to try and do something outside of my comfort. My work tends to be really introspective, and I want to do something that's just straight story and then see what kind of things attach on the outside. So not try and put a lot of the synchronicity. I mean, because primarily that's what I'm playing in the genre of sync is what I'm, you know, as far as writing goes, I'm trying to explore that from the inside there. Alan mentioned it earlier that with fiction, you have a hermetically sealed world and you can, you know, make up the rules and conduct the experiments that you want inside that. And I think this is why people are so they gravitate towards media. But yeah, I'm going to try my hand at science fiction this next year.
Ah, cool. Well, that's always exciting. How about you, Bill?
Do an always record with David and Alan and just waiting for my next inspiration and just seeing what happens next.
All right. Very good. Well, guys, this has been a lot of fun, important and interesting. Thank you so much for your time, talking much about the work that you're all involved in. Let's give out websites here again at the end if you want to give out your personal blogs and, of course, the main website where to go to pick up books and everything. Alan, let's begin with you then.
Please, if people go to thesyncbook.com, I encourage everyone, there is an authors tab where you can find links to all, what is it now, 52 authors from both volumes of the Sync books, all their websites, all their blogs. I encourage you to dig into their stuff. We also do 3 radio shows. There's 42 Minutes with Douglas Bowles and Will Morgan. There's Always Record with Bill Klaus, David Plait, and myself, and Andras Jones, who was just on Radio 314. Him and I have started another radio show, which is a more produced version called Synchronize. You can find all those shows there. If I can ask anything of people listening would be, please like us on Facebook. You know, you could sign up for the newsletter there. We don't really spam people. It's just like, hey, if we put a new book out, we'll send you an email. And what would be really, really helpful is if you do buy a book from Amazon or you buy a book from CreateSpace, please on Amazon.com write a review for the book. Even if you hate it, you know, it just helps to get the word out there and let people know what you're experiencing and whether you liked it or not. So that would be a really big help if people would Amazon reviews.
Very good. Douglas, your blog and or website?
Oh, let's just do my Amazon author page. It's amazon.com/author/DB42. And there you can find my book, which is called Winter's Labyrinth, which was the second title published by Sync Book Press. It came out in 2012. And it's a circular seasonal apocalypse story built on the architecture of a labyrinth. It's a lot of fun, and I would love people to read it. I also have, and this will give you my final word on Rihanna, my newest story is called Dog Park, and it's we're releasing it as something we're calling the SyncBook Singles. It's exclusive digital content from SyncBook writers in an all-digital format. And it's only a dollar, and I encourage all your readers to, or your listeners to check it out, because then you can get my final word on my Rihanna obsession.
All right, interesting. And the last word goes to you, to Bill. Where do we go for more details?
IAHAUSCA.blogspot.com. You can see what my mind has left there on its pages. And everyone, just listen to some more Guided by Voices whenever you get the chance.
All right.
Thanks, Henrik.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Good stuff. Thanks to you, gentlemen. Keep up the good work to all of you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Later. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you. And we'll have to have you on 42 Minutes sometime.
I'd love to do it. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, guys.
You bet.
I'd like to extend a special thanks to all our members who at this time are staying with us and support our endeavor as we expand into new areas and productions. We are starting off more projects right now, and we're entering into a new wave both creatively and in productivity. So a big thanks to all our listeners, friends, and supporters. Coming up on Red Ice Radio, we have Stefan Kinsella, Stephen Mailer, Jeffrey James, and then Tom Secker. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Stay cool, and we will talk to you more soon. Bye-bye.